Hello, and welcome to a spooky, scary Halloween episode of the Professional Horror Podcast, the only podcast that stays lit even after midnight. I am your host, the wonderful and oh-so-pretty Chris Donovan, and this week is a real treat because not only do we once again have two special guests, but these guests are two-fourths, or one-half if you want to be pedantic about it, of the hosts of one of my favorite podcasts, the Kinky Ladies Book Club Podcast. It's Amanda Chalmers and Nicole Solaro. How you doing, ladies?
Doing pretty good.
Hey, Chris. Doing well. Feeling spooky.
Super spooky.
It's the spookiest time of the year, after all. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about one of the most Halloween-y movie that has ever existed. More Halloween per square inch than anything that's ever existed. We are talking about Trick or Treat today. And this is a pretty exciting episode for me because I am just meeting Amanda for the first time. Or virtually meeting Amanda for the first time. This is fun. But also,
You should leave that in. Yeah.
Fix it in post. Fix it in
post. But on the other end of the spectrum, Nicole is one of my closest friends. We go way back. It's weird. If you're a frequent listener to this podcast, Nicole's name might ping for you because she's been name dropped more than once. But this is the first time we're actually having Nicole on the show. It's kind of fun.
I am so happy to finally make it on. It's just been a weird clash of our schedules never meshing until this moment. And I think I'm literally like the last of our friend group to cycle onto the podcast.
Pretty much. I think the problem for a while was we were going to do House on Haunted Hill. And just the idea of rewatching all 8 episodes to prep for a podcast was just such a daunting thing.
I'm rewatching it now for fun.
For me, I was like, I'll get to it again. I love House on Haunted Hill. I mean, Haunting of Hill House, so good. But I don't watch TV very frequently. I still haven't started Midnight Mass. I still haven't watched Bly Manor.
Oh, Midnight Mass was really good. I really liked it.
Oh, I feel the opposite.
Really? Yeah. No, I loved it. I just rewatched Hill House. I marathoned it all in one day again.
I'm so proud of you. I'm going to go actually watch an episode after we're done recording. That's like my itinerary for the night. Record spooky podcast. Go watch an episode of Hill House. Go to bed. Because that's my life.
Like, I'm so bad at watching TV shows. Like, I was a big fan of the graphic novel series Lock and Key. And then it became a Netflix show. And I was like, for years, I'm like, I can't wait for the show to finally get made. Still haven't seen it. It's been out for a year.
And the season 2 trailer just dropped.
Yeah, season 2 is coming out in like a week. I haven't started it. It's a problem. I don't have the attention span to binge things. It's not in my blood.
I often start but do not finish. I'll make it. If there's a 5 seasons, I'm going to make it to 3.5, and then I'm never going to watch it again.
It's like I'd rather just the show. That's why I kind of like Haunting of Hill House more, because I just want it to be over. I don't want to binge 2 seasons and then be like, how long is this going to be going on for? Am I going to have to wait for the next 7 seasons to come out? You know.
And then it inevitably, anything that goes on for long enough will inevitably get bad. So Hill House is perfect as it is in its length. I will talk all 3 of those shows with you because I have such a hard on for Hill House and a little bit of erectile dysfunction from Midnight Mass, to be totally honest with you.
Hard disagree.
We will definitely get to those episodes at some point down the road because, like I said, I definitely want to revisit those and talk about those at length because I was nerding out when I watched Hill House for the first time. I remember, Nicole, you were like, when I hadn't seen it, you were like, why haven't you watched it? You're going to love it. I'm like, I know I'll love it, but I just bad at things.
And for context, listeners, the reason why I really hyped it up to Chris so much is that when he says we go way back, we met 11 years ago in film school. So I had pretty much every single class for 4 years straight with you. And we were always right next to each other because our last names are C and D for everything. So that's why I was like, we just went through 4 years of film school. You have to fucking watch this show.
And then I sat down. I was like, yep, this is the best thing I've ever seen. So, but enough about that. Let us get on track. Oof, I am on it today. We're going to transition directly into our first little mini segment called First Blood, which is where we get to know the people on the podcast. So you get to know what lens we view horror through, where we ask everyone on the show what their favorite horror movie and favorite subgenre of horror is. If this is your first episode, I will go first. My favorite horror movie of all time is 1984's A Nightmare on Elm Street. And my favorite subgenres are slashers and creature features. Which one do you want to go first?
I'll go first. I don't know if it technically counts as a horror movie, but my favorite scary movie is Scream.
Oh, yeah.
And then along with that, my favorite subgenre is horror comedy. I'm a huge pansy, so I need an element of comedy in there to keep me interested and break the ice, or else I can't watch it. It gets too spooky and I get too scared.
Love it. I love Scream.
Oh, that's Scream's so great.
All of them.
The perfect movie. So I watch it all the time.
Yeah. I love it so much. Another one's coming out.
Yay. Very Scream excited. 5. Saw the trailer and it was like, I don't know if I should literally absorb anything from it because I know half of it's going to be Mr. X. So.
All original cast. Very exciting.
Yep. What about you, Nicole?
Yeah. So my favorite horror movie of all time is Evil Dead. The original Evil Dead with Bruce Campbell. I saw that in high school and it scared the absolute bejesus out of me. So it has been my favorite ever since. I consume every piece of media, even remotely related to it. Cycling back to our subject of finishing TV shows, I started watching and I haven't finished the Evil Dead series. But I have read Bruce Campbell's biography. So yeah, Evil Dead. However, my favorite subgenre is haunted house because you can do a lot with it. And it's just inherently so scary to be the place where you live, where you're supposed to be your most comfortable and safest, is now the most dangerous place for you. So that is my favorite subgenre of horror and scary. And can I say like a close second?
Sure.
So a close second in films is also the original Halloween because it scared the bejesus out of me the first time I saw it as a teenager, and I love it. Which Evil Dead plus Halloween lead me into, this is not really a subgenre of horror, but it's going to make me like your horror even more. And that's films without A, too much backstory for the villain, and B, no set rules to beat the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Because it is so much scarier if you don't know what the fuck is happening or what to do about it. I think that's wonderfully horrifying. And that when you have all of these rules of we need to do X, Y, and Z to get rid of the demon, it just kind of is like, all right, well, I'm not scared anymore because I know you're going to accomplish X, Y, and Z by the end of the movie.
Yeah, all those are fantastic. I mean, the original Halloween is just a perfect, like, no frills. It's just no filler, all killer movie. It's perfect.
It's beautiful. I actually started watching the Netflix episode on it for Movies That Made Us series.
Yeah, I was going to start that.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And The Evil Dead, of course, is fantastic. Harkening back to the horror comedies, my personal favorite Evil Dead is Part 2, but it's just because, I mean, that's just the wackiest, zaniest thing. It's so good. The whole franchise is amazing. It's just...
When I found out the reason why Evil Dead 2 is the way it is, because technically Sam Raimi sold the rights to Evil Dead 1 to the studio, so they basically needed to remake it in the first like 40 minutes of Evil Dead 2. That just made me laugh hysterically to no end, because I remember the first time I saw Evil Dead 2, I was like, why are we just repeating the first movie?
Yeah, like literally the whole franchise, it's literally, it's one of the only film franchises where every installment is amazing. Like one's great, two is great, Army of Darkness is great. The remake is even pretty good. I don't know. It's such a rare achievement in horror. And Bruce Campbell is just a dreamboat. Love Bruce.
Oh, he's amazing.
I love Bruce Campbell so much.
Getting better with age, too. Mm.
There was a last drive-in with Joe Bob Briggs recently where they watched Maniac Cop 1 and 2.
Oh, I saw that.
And there's a shot in Maniac Cop 2 of Bruce Campbell where, you know, I consider myself to be a straight man, but I was like, oh, damn, Bruce. Like, just the... Oof.
Bruce Campbell doesn't count.
Bruce Campbell's everyone's gimme. Yeah.
We recently watched, Mac bought Evil Dead on VHS, and we took it up to, there's a cabin in upstate New York that we go to that his family owns. It's like in the woods, and it's super creepy. And we watched it on a TV that's about 12 inches wide that has a built-in VCR player, and it really added to the atmosphere. It was really nice. Yeah,
that's beautiful.
I love it.
Perfect date night.
Yep.
The movie we're going to be talking about today is So the movie we're going to be discussing today is 2009's Trick or Treat, technically 2009's Trick or Treat. It had a rough time trying to get out to the masses. It was originally made in 2007 and was going to be a theatrically released film, but then Warner Brothers, who owns the rights to Trick, I mean, who has Trick or Treat, did not want to compete against themselves because at that time they were releasing a Saw film every year. So if they released two horror movies in October, they would be kind of fighting against each other. Finally made its way to direct-to-DVD in 2009, and that's where it became the cult classic we all know it is today. It has a 6.8 out of 10 rating on IMDb and an 83% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. The consensus on Rotten Tomatoes being a deftly crafted tribute to Halloween legends, Trick or Treat hits all the genre marks with gusto and old-fashioned suspense. And yeah, pretty much. It is an anthology film. The synopsis is, interwoven stories demonstrate that some traditions are best not forgotten, as the residents, Anna Paquin, Brian Cox, Dylan Baker, of a small town face real ghosts and goblins on Halloween. Tales of terror reveal the consequence of extinguishing a jack-o'-lantern before midnight, and a grumpy hermit's encounter with a sinister trick-or-treater. And, yeah.
I didn't know that it was originally supposed to be a 2007 release. Mm-hmm. That is news to me.
It is, I kind of consider it to be, it's like almost like one of the last of the cult classics, I think, because now direct-to-VOD doesn't have the same kind, or direct-to-video doesn't have the same kind of like stink on it, I guess you could say, because with streaming services and how many movies get made every year, so many movies are straight to VOD. The horror genre in particular is just like, it's glutted with amazing horror movies that are direct to VOD or direct to streaming or something. Whereas this one was literally kind of dumped on DVD, and then everyone who picks it up. I remember, I don't know if I first saw it in 2009 or if it was like 2010, I want to say, but I was pretty early on this train where me and a bunch of other people saw this movie and were like, holy shit, this is really good. And it just kind of picked up steam and became a cult classic. Whereas now you can't take a turn in a spirit Halloween without seeing Sam the trick-or-treater somewhere.
I almost bought a life-size animatronic Sam the other day, but it was $200 and my husband talked me out of it.
He's so adorable. I love Sam.
He's so cute.
I was going to say, though, the fact that it was originally meant to be a 2007 release does explain how they got Anna Paquin in the height of the True Blood frenzy. Yep.
This is post-X-Men, I think, which is weird, but it is before True Blood, I think.
Yeah, because True Blood was like a 8 or 9, I think, was when season 1 came out, and she became just HBO's darling for a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is fun, too, because I remember, I'll take a quick detour before we dig into the movie. One of my favorite podcasts is a horror podcast called Boys and Ghouls. One of the hosts, Marshall, described this phenomenon that I think fits Trick or Treat really well. He said, as a horror fan, you kiss a lot of frogs. You're always looking for those hidden gems, those never seen before movies to see if you find the one that fell through the cracks that's actually really good. And Trick or Treat really is that, I feel like. Like I said, I think it's the last of that kind of phenomenon, where now movies fall through the cracks because there's just so much good movies, you can't get to all of them.
I vibe with that.
Yeah, I agree. It is one of those movies. We watch it every Halloween. It is tradition. In fact, when we say we have to watch Trick or Treat, we both yell in unison, it's tradition. And it is one of those like fun, it has a very like cult feeling to it when you watch it. Like it feels like, I can't imagine it in theaters. Like, I think that it really deserved that theatrical release, especially, I mean, the cast is not, I mean, it's maybe not A-list, but I mean, Anna Paquin, Dylan Baker, Brian Cox are not small names. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it went straight to DVD 2 years after it was supposed to be released is kind of crazy for such a good movie.
You know what, though? Anthology movies don't do well in theaters either. Like, I don't think I've ever heard of an anthology movie with a theatrical release getting rave reviews no matter what. And it's so difficult to do a really good, really tight anthology movie. And I think they nailed it with this. Like, I didn't question it. There wasn't a moment where I was like waiting for the next film to start, because it was so seamless that like you do kind of forget you're watching an anthology movie.
Mm-hmm. As far as anthology films, it's the only other ones I can think of that might have gotten theatrical release are like VHS, Creepshow.
That's what I was thinking. I don't know if VHS was theatrical or not.
I don't know. I can't remember. Creepshow, I think, was. I think the problem with anthologies too is, a lot of times, like you said, Nicole, if you have an anthology with 4 short films, usually like 2 are really good. Mm-hmm. One's all right, and one you're just like, could we move on? And I think usually it's because anthologies want to be like, we brought 4 different directors to make 4 different films, and they don't fit well together. whereas Trick or Treat is just Michael Dougherty, or Dougherty, if it, however he pronounces his name. So his vision sort of weaves them all together in such a seamless way where it feels like I can't miss any of this. This is all at the same level as each other.
Yeah, it feels much less disjointed than a lot of the other ones. And there's not so much of a jump from story to story. People from each story are woven into each other's stories really nicely. So you're not just seeing one character in the last 5 minutes of the last one, and then all of a sudden you're jumping to a new story. Mm-hmm. You see the same characters throughout the entire thing going back and forth.
And it also gives it a lot of rewatchability where you'll be like, oh, I didn't even notice that person in the background of this shot was from the other story. Or I didn't notice how these things all connect. So, but since it's an anthology and since they sort of go back and forth between stories, for our own sanities, we're going to be treating each one separately as we go through the film. So even though the first 20 minutes we get snippets of the principal story, the Little Red Riding Hood story, and the school bus story, we're just going to be going story by story, starting with the cold open, which in the cold open is, I don't know, a Halloween Scrooge woman who... Well, actually, it starts with that instructional trick-or-treat video, which is fun.
Always check your candy.
And the and then it cuts to, oh yeah, we see shots of like a girl dragging a red wagon, almost getting hit by a car. But then it cuts to a woman who, even though she hates Halloween, she's in a very elaborate costume and in a very elaborately decorated house. It's like...
Yeah, first off, deciding to take your Halloween decorations down the night of Halloween is a choice.
It bothers me so much. It's like the people in movies who put their Christmas tree up on Christmas Eve. What are you doing?
Yeah, like who even, regardless of how much you don't like Halloween, who's got the energy for that shit? Like, also what bothered me too is I don't know anyone in their right mind who would turn down sex to take down their Halloween decorations.
That is not Kinky Ladies approved.
No. Unrealistic.
I think as far as the taking the decorations down that day, it almost feels like the Halloween movie version of someone who walks on screen and kicks a dog to be like, that's a bad guy.
Yeah.
11:05 on Halloween, I'm taking all my decorations down. I don't care how long it takes. Bah, humbug, Halloween. You know? Yeah. Also, about the turning down sex, I don't know why the idea of just like, go put on the tape and I'll be up in a few minutes.
The tape!
It wasn't even a porno of them. Like, when she said, go put on the tape, I'm expecting that to be a whole movie.
Yeah.
Of like, yeah.
Also, it's not a tape, it's the tape. There is one tape that they use.
Also, it's 2007. Tapes they should have solidly out at
they
that
should
point.
Have a DVD player at this time, yes.
they could have had on demand.
And it's labeled nature special. Like, you live alone with people.
There's no kids in the house. Like, what are you doing?
Oh my god.
And they pay for their crimes.
Yes. Because we introduce this tradition that is not one of the rules of Halloween, which is the you must keep the jack-o'-lantern lit until midnight. Completely invented for the film, but I do like it because it is jack-o'-lanterns are supposed to ward off evil spirits, and the evil spirits technically aren't supposed to be gone until Halloween is over. But then, you know, you blow it out and now you are no longer protected from the evil spirits, even though that is a recipe for a fire hazard to keep all those jack-o'-lanterns lit.
Counterpoint, were they evil spirits or were they... just vengeful, sad little kids? Because the evil spirits didn't kill any good guys except for our cold open human sacrifice.
It's true.
That always needs to happen.
It's true. Sam is like the who we discover that Sam is, you know, our evil force who's, or not evil force. He's just kind of chilling. He's just like, hey, it's a fun time for most of the movie. Just pop it in. He likes to see spooky stuff, you know.
He's just a kid who wants candy.
Yeah, and I relate to Sam. I think he's the best. Because he just wants to see spooky shit.
I just want to see spooky shit. I know that I'm fucking safe, though, because I love the fuck out of Halloween.
Absolutely.
So my jack-o'-lanterns stay lit. My home is safe from Halloween vengeful spirits. I give out the good candy, motherfucker.
Nice.
Full size or nothing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Also, that this Amanda, you might be the only one in this group who appreciates this, but I saw online a pair of earrings that were the lollipop and like the candy bar with the razor blade in it recently.
Ooh, yeah. I want those.
Cool. Yeah, I'll send you a link later.
Speaking of that turning down sex, I did have the thought briefly. I was like, it's a miracle this relationship has lasted as long as it has to that they own a house. Because he's clearly like, yeah, Halloween, it's great. And she's like, no, I'm taking this down now. My mom will be here in the morning and you're just going to play video games till noon. I was like, oof, this is...
How did you get to this point? Your mom visiting on November 1st?
In the morning.
The tape is the only thing saving that relationship.
The only thing. I'm gonna be such a dumbass nerd right now. Give me a second. Halloween 2007, day of the week. It was a Wednesday. Mom was coming to visit Thursday morning.
Oh my god, I love it. But yeah, she's taking down all the decorations. There's a little Halloween reference where she sees a masked man in a white mask just like staring at her, but it's just some dude who's just like waiting for his friends. I think that's fun. I do wonder what that teen was like. He's like, I'm gonna stare at this woman until she gets really creeped out, you know, until my friends show up.
There's a part of me that thinks that guy just like can't see out of the mask well.
That could be it too.
No clue what he's looking at.
But yeah, but because of her Halloween Scrooge-ness, Sam gets her, or she is attacked by a mysterious force and she's killed. And the husband doesn't realize it because he mistakes her screams of horror for screams from the tape.
The tape.
Which I will never get enough of, like, is that horror screams? Oh no, that's just sex screams. That's fine.
They sound so similar, don't they?
So similar. So similar. I mean, well, you know, they do sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes.
It's what you're into, you know.
I always love all the spooky ambient stuff, like the fact that when he goes outside, the hanging limbs are now actually hanging limbs. It's just, it's boss. The whole movie just knows exactly what it wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made a note that was a really good setup because in the few moments before Halloween Scrooge gets jack-o'-lanterned, we see that they have like fake limbs mm-hmm. hanging from their trees, and then Sam is very efficient with his time, and in the few moments it took to kill her with a sharpened lollipop, which are dangerous. I actually cut my tongue open once on a sharpened lollipop. He manages to hang her limbs from the tree. So it's like, oh, that was a really good setup there mm-hmm. of like showing the audience the decorations.
It's like, it reminds me of a missed opportunity from, there's this movie called The Houses That October Built, which is about these characters who go cross country looking for the scariest Halloween haunt, you know, like the haunted houses and stuff, the attractions. And they make reference several times to urban legends of, oh, this place, there was once a haunt that had actual limbs and they didn't even know it was real. And I just assumed the ending of the movie was going to be these people's limbs being used in some haunt. I was like, that's a slam dunk, easy, really chilling ending. And they just didn't do it. And I'm like, how did Trick or Treat one up you? And that wasn't even their gimmick. It was your gimmick and you blew it.
That's a thing though, actually. That really happened. I forget where. I could be wrong, but my soul wants to say like Seaside, New Jersey. Like somewhere in that area, one of them boardwalky places. I could be totally wrong on that location. Somebody fact check me later.
There was. Six Flags maybe or Action Park had the haunted house made out of foam that caught fire and killed a bunch of people.
Not what I was thinking of. I was thinking also of spooky. This also very spooky. Yeah. Probably Action Park.
Like I think it might have been Action
you Park. You said it out loud and I'm like, probably Action Park. Class Action Park. No, but there was one of those boardwalk haunted houses attractions. And I think in like the 30s or 40s, they had like this like, ooh, mummy. And they were like, cool prop. And then later on it was discovered like, no, this is an actual like mummy. Like mm-hmm. this is a real like mummified remains that you found. How did you get this? I'm going to look that the fuck up now.
It wouldn't surprise me because I know I've heard the story. I don't even know if this is real, but I'm pretty sure it's real. That the skeletons in the movie Poltergeist, some of them were real.
Yeah.
And they didn't know until after the fact. That's why Poltergeist is like a cursed movie, basically.
I was way off. It was in California.
Yeah.
California.
In the 70s. I was so off on all of my details.
I wouldn't put it past Jersey, though, so that makes sense.
Yeah, it's fair.
At the end of the cold open, we kind of get a little tour of the town, which I want to live in this town. It's just such a... It reminds me of the time I spent like a weekend in Salem, and Salem just goes all out for Halloween, and it's great.
I fucking love Salem.
Yeah. It also reminds me of, there's another anthology called The Mortuary Collection that's on Shudder, and it has that spooky town vibe down pat. It's so good.
Can I say a couple things about the town?
What's up?
This town is fucking murder capital of the world.
Yes.
How is this town functioning if everything that happens in this movie is tradition? The body count would be off the charts every year.
It's just one night a year, like The Purge. They overlook it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's just Halloween.
I'm gonna tally now. We've got the body. We've got, so far, Scrooge, first body of the body count. I'll keep counting.
Check
mark. It's tradition.
It's tradition.
From Murder Capital USA.
So let's move on to the first official segment of the film called The Principal, which starts off with a jackass kid walking down the street, destroying jack-o'-lanterns because he's the worst. And then he goes to his principal's house, which I only know Dylan Baker as Kurt Connors from the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. So I did not expect him to play such an effective creep, but he's like terrifying in these scenes.
He has, and I don't mean this as a mean thing about Dylan Baker, he sort of has a creepy dude face. Like, he has very distinct features. Not that he's like bad looking or anything, but he has like that sort of look to him where he could be like a super creep.
I think it's the glasses and the slicked hairstyle that really brings it out, though.
Yeah.
It's that moment where you look at him and then you're like, that's not Willem Dafoe, but who is that?
I love his, like, one of his first lines is the jackass kid's going to take all the candy from the take one candy only bin. And he just looks at the kid, he's just like, don't waste a good lie on this. It's just candy.
Yeah. I did like that too.
I appreciate that. But this is where we get our first really rule of Halloween, as we said. We have the made up rule of leave your jack-o'-lanterns lit until midnight, and the real rule, which is always check your candy, because he eats a piece of candy and violently vomits, like disgustingly, the most disgusting vomit scene I've seen in a movie in a while, I think.
Everywhere.
I was horrified by that. Hated it. Absolutely hated that part.
Speaking of the town, how does this town function? The check your candy because it might be poisoned is a total urban legend in every other place in the world. The only time it's ever actually happened was a parent poisoning their own kids, like in the 70s. It's just a urban legend that we can't get rid of. But this principal like poisoned like a lot of candy, it seems.
That's what I mean. Like, how does this town function? They're the only town in America where people are actually sticking razor blades in the candy.
He is the worst principal.
Yes, and he's a principal of a school.
And he's making kids vomit chocolate.
And he's got his own kid, too.
Yeah.
How does that kid not narc on him? He's just screaming top of his lungs.
Oh my god, that kid, it reminds me of the kid from The Babadook because he's just the worst kid ever.
I hated that kid so much.
The way he's just constantly screaming like, daddy. It's just like, you need to stop, man. I only have a limited amount of wear and tear I can put on my ears. But according to IMDb facts, whatever they used for the vomit was actually quite delicious from what I saw.
Interesting.
Oh,
so that's pleasant.
I don't know if any of you, I'm probably the only one here who has made a dog throw up after it's eaten a bunch of chocolate, but it looks just like that. Just projectile black goo that stinks everywhere.
Oh, no.
It's very realistic.
Oh, that's the worst.
The principal, for being a murderer who kills children and puts razor blades and candy and things, has unending patience for his own shitty kid. He's always very patient and like good, like he really holds it down for his very annoying child, but he just cannot abide someone else's child lying or kicking a pumpkin.
Maybe that's why he's killing the kids. Like, his own kid frustrates him so much he takes it out on other kids, disposes them in his own backyard, which is not a good move, in my opinion. Especially, his own kid can see into the yard. So, like, what's stopping any of the neighbors in the surrounding homes from looking into the yard?
Like, at least John Wayne Gacy put it in the crawl space. You can't look, right? From opposing yards into that. You know?
Can't bring the body out of the house.
And ultimately, he's a good dad, you know, because he does help his own kid.
He does.
I guess so.
I do like the idea, though, that his moral compass is like, I can't kill my own kid, but my kid's so annoying it makes me want to kill other kids, which I find okay.
I'm going to teach my kid how to kill other kids and use their heads for jack-o'-lanterns.
Hell yeah. Real quick, too, I just want to say, we have our first real look at Sam in this, because it's just in the killer vision in the cold open. But there's a scene where a group of teens who will become important later in a different story go to trick-or-treating at the principal's house, and they see him with blood all over his shirt, and they're like, oh, cool costume. And then Sam's in the back and pulls out a candy bar, which will also be important later, because this movie just is, it's layered. It's like, you know, it's like onions.
Really layered, yeah. Like onions.
It's like an onion.
No, it's a Halloween theme. It's like a Take Five.
It's like a Take Five, yeah.
Oh, love a Take Five. Love a Take Five.
And what also is weird is, from what we know about the head ending, there's when the principal is burying the kids in his backyard, one of them like grabs at him, and it doesn't seem to be the other kid. So was he on number two of the night?
And only cut one of their heads off?
Yeah. What is this?
Yeah, I had a continuity question about that as well, because at first I'm like, all right, maybe it was before he tore this kid's head off. But then no, his own son's yelling about his jack-o'-lantern through the whole sequence of him trying to bury this still twitching corpse. And we learn when the dad goes into the basement that the jack-o'-lantern his own monstrous little shit's yelling about is the dead kid who vomited dog chocolate everywhere and got his head cut off.
Yeah, because the kid's been screaming the whole time. He wants to make a jack-o'-lantern with his dad, but he needs his dad's help around the eyes. And the kid's like, shut up, I'm burying a corpse. You cannot yell at this moment. You're bringing attention, as Nicole said. There are neighbors who can see my murder. For those who don't know, I am a bit of a writer myself, so is Nicole. We both do some spooky story writing. To me, a lot of times a short film or a short story is a lot like a joke. You have a setup and then you hit him with like a plot twist, which is like a, you know, that punchline at the end. And two of the Trick or Treat segments fall into that category of short story, where it sets you up to be like, this murderer's principal, now he's going to get his kid next because the kid's the innocent bystander. Oh no, he almost discovered that his dad's a murderer. And you think he's going to stab his kid to help him, because he's right before he goes in the house, he starts like yammering like under his breath, like, oh, help me with the eyes, daddy. I wish mom were still here, daddy. But then when he stabs down and you hear the human crunch of a knife, it's the jackass kid who he's stabbing, and his son is in on this weird slasher dad game. It's pretty awesome. It's a good reveal, is what I'm saying.
Family bonding.
Family bonding over carving human skulls.
I noted a different part of that sequence, too, that gets called back later, where the dad says, oh, I forget. The kid asks him about something, and he's like, oh, no, daddy's got a date later. Mm-hmm. So I just want to throw that out there, because I do want to talk about it later when that comes up, because I loved that callback.
Overall, the principal segment is not my favorite segment, but I do like it. I think it's a fun little ease you into the movie segment, where it kind of lets you know the kind of movie this is going to be. It's going to be a little rough, a little raw, but still have a little twisted sense of humor to it. Any thoughts before we move on to the school bus massacre?
I'm just so amazed that this is just a regular occurrence in this town. Like,
do you think it's every Halloween? Like,
how many
children have gone missing out in front of the principal's house that no one has noticed?
This town is so Halloween-y, even the abandoned streets are lined with lit jack-o'-lanterns. This is what happens in this town, okay? And when you do that, hey, you're going to lose a couple people, but that's the price you pay for spookiness.
It's the price you pay. It's like the town from It. Couple of kids every couple of years.
Yeah. It's fine.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
It's tradition.
It's tradition.
So the next segment in Trick or Treat is the school bus massacre revisited. Nicole?
I, again, have a lot of that's a choice feelings about it, but I'll save it. I'm going to save it for the end because it's mainly about the reveal in the last segment that connects it to mm-hmm. the school bus massacre segment where I'm like, okay, that was a choice.
Yeah.
but I'll get there.
Fucking love that connection, by the way.
I really liked this segment.
I did want to say, before, this is the first time Nicole has ever seen this film. And before she watched it, I told her that I thought it would be pretty clear which one of the shorts was my favorite. And since it's one of the next three, I'm curious, Nicole, which do you think is my favorite segment?
I think your favorite segment is the Anna Paquin segment, with this one being a very close second. Because the words you told me was that when you see it, you're going to be like, oh, that's a real Chris Donovan thing.
This is my favorite segment, the school bus massacre. All right,
well, I was close. But could you see why I think it would be the Anna Paquin one?
It's. I think my order is just flip-flopped. I think this is my favorite, and I love the Red Riding Hood segment at second place. The other two I do like a lot, but they're competing for third and fourth for me. Because this segment, to me, feels like an R-rated Goosebumps story.
It does. It does have a very Goosebumps-y feel to mm-hmm. it.
It's like the cast and characters of a Goosebumps story through like a Fear Street kind of lens almost, because it's a little more grown up, a little more grimy, and there's actual murders as opposed to just, oh no, that they're in trouble with their parents. As much as I love Goosebumps, you know, it's my favorite thing on the planet, but still.
Yeah, I know. You send me a Goosebumps every year for Christmas. It's really sweet.
Oh.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's my Christmas card to our Write Club people, is just send them all Goosebumps books.
That's true. You don't send Christmas cards. You just send Goosebumps books.
I love that. Merry That's Christmas. So fun.
I have so many extra ones of the original covers and stuff.
I wish I had all mine from when I was a kid. I had so many. I started reading them probably before I should have. Mm-hmm. And they were like fourth or fifth grade reading level, and I was in like second grade. Like, wow, this is cool. My mom just thought it was weird.
There was a few years ago, I found like five or six from a library book sale, which I don't know what time traveling wizard sold these to the books to the library, but these were like pristine, off the shelf in 1996 condition, being sold for 50 cents a piece. So I was like, give me, please. Thank you. Including The Haunted Mask, which is the best book, I think.
The one that always scared the fuck out of me was Don't Look in the Basement or Don't Go in the Basement.
Stay Out of the Basement.
Yeah, that one.
I just rewatched that episode the other day. It's so good. It still holds up. I don't care. But anyway, on topic. The next segment, my favorite segment, is the School Bus Massacre Revisited section, where those trick-or-treaters from earlier, they're going around town collecting jack-o'-lanterns, including going to knock on the door of, I guess, one of their teachers, and just being absolutely traumatized by seeing their teachers and coaches being adults in the party.
They're having like a hocus-pocus adult mm-hmm. party.
Like one of their teachers is like shaking her butt at them and hitting them with the cattail. And one of their coaches is like in a hot dog costume.
I was actually wondering, I don't know if you've ever seen the show Dead Like Me. It's really good if you haven't seen it. The one teen who has like the angel wing costume, she's like the main mean girl. And the teacher who answers the door are both in a show together that came out called Dead Like Me in the early 2000s, starring Mandy Patinkin. It's a really great show if you haven't seen it. And I tried to see if I could find if like the casting director or the writer like worked on that mm-hmm. show also, but I couldn't find anything about it.
It is weird. She's really good though. The girl with the angel wings.
Yeah.
I think she plays that like bitchy bean girl like to perfection in this. And then we also have, there's three of them. There's the girl with the angel wings. There's the one girl who has the braces with the full face gear. One kid who's wearing a pirate costume. But the only two are actually important. The two of this crew who are the most important are Schrader, who they meet up with, who has a shopping cart full of a couple jack-o'-lanterns. And they go to see Rhonda, who has an entire whole front lawn just of jack-o'-lanterns. And one of them's like, we should have just gone right here. Why'd we even go to all the other places? Because she's got like 50 jack-o'-lanterns. She treats Halloween right.
Poor weird Rhonda.
I love Rhonda.
She's so sweet.
So these kids, they get 8 jack-o'-lanterns from Rhonda's house, and they invite her weirdly. It's very similar to like a Carrie kind of situation where they clearly are inviting the weird girl out when they normally would not, out to the abandoned rock quarry, where Macy, the angel-winged girl, she brings them to the edge of the rock quarry, and she's like, I love it because she's preparing for the dramatic story reveal. And the other girl's like, oh, I heard the story. She's like, shut up. I'm going to tell it. I have a whole thing planned. That's when we flash back to see what happened, which is just the most heartbreaking story ever, which is a bunch of developmentally disabled characters.
Just again, how does this town function?
How does this town function? There's a bunch of developmentally disabled children who are all in these really cool, elaborate, homemade-looking Halloween costumes, and their bus driver, who we find out was paid by the town's parents to drive them off a rock quarry, which, like, I don't know how much you pay a bus driver for that. Like,
what? I'm sure there's a sliding scale.
Like, what was the, like, do you think... Do you think if they paid him more, he put a little more effort into, like, the cover-up? Or, like, they paid him only just enough that he was like, rock quarry.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, these kids are literally handcuffed to their seats, which is just insane. And they're literally like, we don't like having these kids anymore. Here's some money, bus driver. Go murder our children for us. And he's like, all right, whatever. Okay. And the vampire kid is played by Richard Harmon, who is in... Grave Encounters 2 later on, which is kind of whatever. Just stick to Grave Encounters 1. And he's also in an episode of R.L. Stine's The Haunting Hour called Scarecrow, which is really excellent. I checked that out. But it's just so heartbreaking because he's counting the house numbers. And the second they go past where they need to, he just starts saying, like, wrong way, wrong way. And it's just heartbreaking to see, like, him, like, freak out in this scene.
Yeah, when he starts saying that he wants to go home he's handcuffing them and passing out the candy, it's so sad. It's really, really awful.
It's so sad. And at the same time, I'm like, there is no way these parents would have gotten away with this murder.
It's a bad murder. It's a bad murder plan because he drives them out to the rock quarry. And literally he just is, I guess he's planning to just like hand push the bus, put it in neutral and just shove it into the quarry. Doesn't make a lick of sense, but the vampire kid instead breaks out and is trying to drive it because he doesn't know how to drive because he's a little kid. Just ends up driving it over the edge himself, killing all of the children, but the bus driver gets away. We don't know where. And Macy, which is a line that will become funny in 5 minutes, says, some say the bus sank down so deep it could never be found. Others say the town just didn't want it to be found. And when we go down 5 minutes later, it's literally half out of the water.
it's literally like to the point where unless it resurfaced or some of the water has evaporated or been drained out over the years. But like if the bus went in that way, the kids at the back would never have gone underwater. Like no. They would not have.
It's like I saw that and I was just like, well, let's chalk that up to didn't want to find it because
kids? What kids? I never had a kid.
What? Like you literally all you had to do at that rock quarry is look down and just what happened.
There's a bunch of dead kids down there. That's weird.
And I mean, not to throw plot holes because this is my favorite thing, but there's a working elevator at this rock quarry. I didn't see it when they showed up with the bus. So that was probably installed later, potentially. And then it's like, whatever.
We'll just work around the bus.
Exactly. It's like rock quarries are for a fucking purpose. They're not just holes in the ground where you can dispose of shit.
Oh my God.
They're built specifically for teenagers to go and smoke weed in, Nicole.
Yes, that is true.
So all of the teenagers who would have gone to smoke weed at this rock quarry would have found the bus.
Yep.
But Macy's plan is to provide some kind of offering for those doomed souls and bringing 8 jack-o'-lanterns down, one for each of the children. And the elevator can only hold 3 safely, so the first 3, Macy, Braces Girl, and Schrader go down first. And what I love about Rhonda, when she goes down, when Rhonda and the pirate guy go down, and you hear like, oh no, screaming, monsters are attacking us, and like their jack-o'-lanterns all go out, Rhonda like takes charge. It's kind of awesome. She's like, the jack-o'-lantern will protect you. I'm going to go out there and find them. And I'm like, way to go, girl.
She's the real spooky one. Like she knows what's up and she's not. Yeah. She's like probably a little bit afraid, but she's like, we can handle this. I can do this. I know what's going on.
Yeah, like she seems like she feels like safe in the spooky realm.
Mm-hmm. She carved like 1,000 jack-o'-lanterns. I'd say she's solidly okay
yeah.
with the spooky realm.
But again, going back to this is like an R-rated Goosebumps story. It turns out this is just the most elaborately evil teenage scare plan of all time.
Yeah.
Where the three kids are dressed up as evil ghouls. And they wearing chains and they just chased Rhonda until she literally cracks her head open pretty much. And oh my God, it's so cool, but it's just like, bro, that is the meanest thing you could have done to this poor girl.
All the kids in this movie are terrible.
They're all terrible, except Rhonda.
Except Rhonda. But also, like, that was so elaborate. It's like, so, like, beyond teenage effort of elaborate pranks. They had to make sure that fucking elevator worked in order to pull this off.
What I will say, my only counter to that is that since this town is so OTT spooky, Macy had competition to come up with the coolest prank she could have, because otherwise it would have just been like any other day in this spooky town. How does this town function? By being spookier than any other town.
She had to do just one step below murder, basically, yes. in order to yeah. pull off an actual prank in this town.
Otherwise, it would have just been any other day. No, this is Halloween. You pull out the stops.
Mm-hmm. This is Halloween. And although, in fairness, she went just below murder, which means she underperformed
for
Halloween.
That's true.
She's young still. She's got time.
She got time. Well, she doesn't.
Not anymore.
And I will say, even though I was making fun of the bus being visible, that shot of the bus with like just like ash or something falling looks so boss. This whole segment's shot really cool with the moonlight, and it's like more fog than the actual movie, the fog, mm-hmm. in this one scene. More fog. I stole that from Elvira. I'm sorry. She had a special the other day where we watched The City of the Damned. And she said, this movie has more fog than The Fog and the remake of The Fog. I was like, respect.
Love Elvira. I saw, like, what's your, like, spooky girl horoscope or something like that? And Aries was Elvira is your spooky horoscope. And I was like, ooh. I dig. Yeah. I can be an all.
She had a Shudder special a couple weeks ago. It was pretty good.
I heard about that. I haven't watched it yet.
It's pretty good. It's like just old. It's like we watched House on Haunted Hill, her own movie. We watched City of the Damned and some other movie that was pretty bad. But after they scare, I always love this moment too, which is when Rhonda wakes up, she sees one of the zombies who are like trying to take care of her, and she just haymaker punches this dude in the face. Like full fight or flight. She's just like, and it's just the braces girl. And she's like, oh, y'all are just the worst. I see how it is.
They were the worst.
And Macy then kicks in the last. I mean, they did with the pirate kid, since you couldn't be a zombie. They just made fake entrails and made it seem like one of the ghouls was like eating him the whole time. But then when Macy kicks the last of the jack-o'-lanterns into the quarry, since they don't have the protection anymore, you hear like whisper voices on the wind and the actual kids pop up. Like when the braces girl gets yanked away by the chains that she's been wearing as a costume. So awesome.
That's a trope in horror movies that I'm really fond of. The, haha, it was fake, just kidding, we were just fucking with you. And then the actual, you know, entity comes and fucks everybody up. It's so good.
Mm. I love it. And then, speaking of that elevator, we need to make sure that was working. Rhonda has locked herself in there, and when all the kids are like, oh no, the zombies are real, Rhonda says, fuck them kids.
I know.
I love it.
Rhonda's got such a cold bitch move, because she does the, like, yeah, I'm going to pretend to put the key in the, oops, I dropped it, and now I'm going to hit the up button.
Ta-ta. Oh,
and she's just pieces out. I would have jumped on the bottom of that elevator and just clung to the side until it got to the top. But I guess these kids, you know, they don't have the drive as I do, I guess. And then as she gets to the top and she hears them being torn apart by the monsters, Sam just shows up, and Sam's like, hey, what's up? And that's Sam's part in the story. Hey, what's up?
Cool jack-o'-lanterns.
I've had days where I've just watched this segment if I only had like 20 minutes or so, just because I just love, I love fake urban legend stories. I love shitty kids getting their comeuppance stories. So this just ticks a lot of my boxes.
I like a comeuppance.
I texted you while we were reviewing this, my notes, where before I realized the punchline of the Little Red Riding Hood story, I wrote, is this one Chris Donovan's favorite?
Oh, man, it's a good one. Speaking of the Red Riding Hood one, let's transition to that. That was smooth as silk.
This is my favorite one.
It is a really good one. I do like this a lot. So we start at the very one. This is the most, the one problem I have with this one, I guess, is the fact that it's the most choppy. And not being the pacing shot, but I mean, it's the one that is most interwoven. So like the school bus massacre, once we start the school bus massacre section, that's all we get for like 20 minutes or so. Whereas this one has more like, here's 5 minutes, here's 5 minutes, here's 5 minutes.
Yeah, you're right.
And so it just takes a little bit away from it.
I was going to say, it is like the most fake-out-y one. Like, it's it's the one that gives you the most, you know, plot twist where you think you know where it's going and then it kind of flips back. And I think the it being a little bit more disjointed kind of helps that a little bit. Helps the bait and switch.
So this section of the story begins with four women who are getting into their Halloween costumes. And there's a little kid sneaking in there looking in while they're chatting about how they're going to get some tonight. Which, fun fact, that little kid actor is the same little kid actor who plays Sam in a lot of the shots.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
And he's got a lollipop while he's peeping.
Yeah, they're getting all dressed up, and this conversation will become important later. But they're just getting up in a bunch of, like, you know, hot costumes trying to get dates for the big party at Sheep's Meadow. Sorry. It was one. I didn't even catch that till this time when I watched it. I was like, we're going to Sheep's Meadow. I was like, Sheep's Meadow.
Dramatic pause.
Dramatic pause.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And they're all kind of dressed, not skanky. It's pretty, these are pretty high quality costumes, first of all. These are like $200 costumes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, they cost $200. We actually see the price tag on one of the costumes.
Like, I used to work at a Party City. These are high end costumes that they're buying.
Yeah, for a costume store on Halloween, you're going to tell me that those costumes were still available?
Not a
chance. I went to a Spirit Halloween a week ago, and that place was a nightmare. I almost had a panic attack. There was nothing on the shelves. There were children screaming everywhere.
I want to know who plans to go to, like, another town for a party without buying a Halloween costume first, though.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because, like, this segment is transitioned in from a newscast about how this is like Ohio Salem. Like, this is the dopest Halloween town in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And then we transition into these girls buying these $200 costumes on Halloween for a party town they traveled to from elsewhere, because they're talking about how last year they went to Florida and the year before that they went wherever the fuck. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, who? This is such poor planning on your part.
Yeah. And also, as someone who worked at a Party City, you cannot just wear your costume to the front and have me flirtatiously scan your costume. And if I had made that 38 double D comment or whatever he made, I would be promptly fired, probably.
Absolutely. Politely asked to leave.
With a gorgeous woman. That's not how things work.
You would have to delete your social media and disappear.
In fairness, he does disappear.
That's true.
True.
But Anna Paquin, as I said, she's dressed as Red Riding Hood. She's dressed much more covered up. And she's like, I look like I'm 5 years old. Which, again, that's a very expensive 5 year old's costume then. Because this is like movie quality Red Riding Hood suit.
It's also still pretty sexy. It's not it's not like a little kid's costume. She still looks really good in it.
Mm. It's got a full corset.
Yeah.
But they keep talking about how they need to get dates for the show. And Anna Paquin's how she wants her first time to be special. Oh, she needs to find someone for a date. Oh, my God. And she's like, goes out on her own. God damn it, Chris. Why do you write notes like this?
Well, I was going to say, welcome to the Kinky Ladies Book Club, where we can never read the notes that we write.
Nope. You should see my handwriting.
I legit write notes sometimes like, oh, no, he dead. And then I'm like, who? What are you talking
about? Do the same thing.
A lot of the Kinky Ladies behind the scenes is me editing out D being like, I can't read my own handwriting.
Because I have a line that says, he's young and cute. Yeah, you can say that. Who? whatever.
The checkout guy. They like, because Cinderella picks up the checkout guy because he's young and cute. And then the other two ladies literally pick up the newscasters while they're working. Like, these guys are on the job and they pick them up.
I do like that it seems like, because they're being, all of them are the flirtatious ones. Literally one of them is like, well, it's some big equipment you guys are loading. And he's just like, thanks. He's like, yeah, this is my job I'm doing.
And then I'm going to go home to my wife, you weird lady.
I think that's, isn't that the same woman who also tells Anna Paquin's character to like play hard to get?
Yeah, I think it is. And she does not play hard to get at all.
She does not.
She literally just walks up to two rando guys and is like, hey, two hot women want a date tonight? And they're like, yeah, yes, please. Thank you. Hi. Hi. Nice to meet you.
She's like, look at me. My costume is short and I have tits. Do you want to hang out?
And literally
that's
she
how
like,
you do it.
And she literally nudges her friend to be like, hey, we're picking these two guys up together. You got to say you're part of this line.
I mean, that's how I got my husband. So,
that's true.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the next time the story picks up is we see a murder where a vampire in a black mask and a black robe is making out with some attractive woman. But then she doesn't realize she's been bit 5 times because she's just so lost in ecstasy at the moment.
Just bleeding out on the sidewalk.
And then she like tries to run out to the party, but everyone's like, oh, we can't tell real blood from fake blood. This is the most Halloween-y town ever.
She's so obviously in distress too. It's like so hard to watch because she's obviously not okay, and everyone's like, ha ha ha, funny Halloween stuff. Wow. You're drunk.
I do kind of like the trope of surrounded by people, but they all think it's, you know, everything's fine kind of thing. So I do like the sort of I'm actually in peril from a murderer, but because everyone is dressed like a murderer, no one knows. But at the same time, it's like it does get a bit extreme in that moment.
Yeah,
it does. And you should also note that actually at the time that I like this was my first time watching, so I didn't know this was part of the Little Red Riding Hood segment at first. I thought it was a different segment.
But yeah, I can agree with that because the fourth story doesn't make itself known until literally the third story ends, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And the other three have been pretty omnipresent between each other. So I can understand that. But the vampire does get this woman, and we don't really know how he murders her, but he just does, and then lays her down on the street and closes her eyes. Everyone's like, yeah, this is normal.
Yeah, I just watched that guy do that. It seems totally fine.
This segment hurts especially now, because I don't know if anyone else occasionally reads the news to be sad like I do, but did you just hear about what happened to that woman on a train?
No.
No.
A woman was... she was raped on a train in like a full train car and no one did anything.
Yikes.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That is like that is a horror movie. Like something terrible is happening to you and there are strangers all around and no one will help. Mm-hmm. That makes it so much worse.
Yeah, because it makes you feel so helpless. That's why I feel like the scene's effective, but at the same time it does seem to, it just gets right at the edge of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
You're like, someone would notice, right? But maybe not. And I finally remember what the he's young and cute, yeah, you can say that, is in reference to. Because Anna Paquin's sister, well, Anna Paquin's character is named Laurie, which is obviously a reference to 1978's Halloween, gets a call from her sister, and she's like, who's your favorite sister? I found you a date. And she goes, is he young and cute? And the sister's like, yeah, you can say that, because he's dressed like a baby, and he's an overweight man. That's what that was in reference to, which is a little cheeky fun.
That's a whole nother realm of kink. Just middle-aged guys who dress like babies to get some.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys have done one or two adult child books.
Oh, we did the mommy baby.
Yes.
It was just the one.
It was a lesbian mommy baby. Just the one. It'll be the only one.
It'll be the only one.
Not to yuck anybody's yums. But no,
yeah, we all tried the kink and collectively decided not for us.
You gotta do it sometimes. You gotta see, am I the weird one for thinking this is weird? You gotta take a look sometimes. But yeah, that's not, no, that's a no for me, dog. But this is the reason why this scene is important, is because this is the first time we see our creepy vampire guy look at Anna Paquin's Laurie. And there's like the weird, like hushed music. The soundtrack in this movie is really cool, but there's a lot of like hushed voice, you know, hushed choir kind of thing. So it's like the sound effect.
There is a lot of that. Yes.
I had to clear my throat for that one. It's true.
I should get the vinyl of that.
Just that on repeat for 2 hours. Uh-huh.
Put me right to sleep.
But then Laurie goes down, like we said, the abandoned road lit on either side with jack-o'-lanterns, which again, any town that takes Halloween this seriously is where I want to live. Because that looked awesome. I would love to walk down that path, but
super fire hazard.
Super fire hazard. There's all these dead leaves on the ground next to the jack-o'-lanterns. Big no-no. But she is attacked by the vampire, and this is where we get our big fake-out ending, where we see the red cloak fall out of the sky and land in the middle of their party. They take the hood off, and it's the vampire guy. They take the mask off, and it's the principal from the first segment.
Steve Wilkins, you bastard. How many people have you killed tonight?
Yeah.
That was his date. He said he had a date in the beginning to his kid, like, daddy's got a date tonight, and his date is at least one woman he murdered, and he was definitely going in for a second one.
Meanwhile, his seven-year-old is just home alone.
with a corpse. Somebody better check that dead woman's, like, eHarmony account, too, because I bet the principal has contacted
probably
her.
But not only that, that means at least potentially two kids, one adult, and whoever else ate his poisoned candy potentially died all in one night. This guy's going berserk at this point. Mm-hmm. He's this like, it's tradition, scream. Halloween murder time.
We need to just call serial the town.
It's his serial killer berserker mode. That's where it all goes down.
But like, even the craziest ones didn't do like four in one night. This guy's insane. But yeah, but then Lori kind of struts out without her. It's funny because we were just talking about this last week, my last episode with Ginger Snaps. Now without the robe, Anna Paquin's all like strutting and like, ooh, look at this woman. She's so gorgeous, you know.
She gets hot now because she's not wearing a sweater. Like,
yeah, but that's how it's shot though, because now her shoulders are bare. That's supposed to be like, ooh.
Yeah, her corset is very prominent and her tits are massive looking. A lot of good contouring on her boobs right mm-hmm. there.
A plus. But then if we find out this is not a vampire story, all these women are werewolves, which love werewolves. Love werewolves. Probably my favorite movie monster.
And the principal is just like werewolf. Wearing fake teeth too.
Like yeah. an idiot.
Which apparently were good enough to kill people though.
Yeah. Those are probably custom made.
Probably. So that's another betrayal for this serial killer. Is no one doing police work at this town?
There's no police in Ohio.
They just go, you know, forget it, Jake, it's Halloween.
Forget it, Jake, it's Halloween. If we cycle back to the principal segment real quick, in his initial segment, we do get a shot inside of his house, and his candy poisoning workstation is like in the middle of his living room. So if anyone searched the house, it's right there.
Oh my god. That makes me think that he's just not alone and they're just like, we got like five serial killers loose. We'll get him eventually.
We'll get to it.
And the werewolf transformation is so different than any I've ever seen because it's literally like they're wearing human costumes and they're like peeling them off. Like they're peeling their arm skin off like it's gloves. They're pulling their leg skin off like it's a boot or something. Super gross, but super cool. And they have like they scratch like the back as if it's like the zipper they got to pull down.
Mm-hmm.
All while Marilyn Manson's cover of Sweet Dreams Are Made of This plays.
It's a very cool sequence.
It is a very cool sequence.
It is really cool. Song did not age well.
Oh, well, Principal Wilkins is sniveling on the ground like she's an idiot. Just
like, I'm sorry. Question about this segment. Because, like, while he's on the ground, all the other, like, dead dudes are around. And, like, Lori's like, oh, it's my first time to the principal. And I'm like, is it her first time transforming? Killing a guy? Is she going to, like, assault him? Like, I don't know what Lori's planning to do, and I don't feel bad for Principal Wilkins either way because he is a bad guy, but like all of the other dudes were probably just fine normal people that now have been murdered by the werewolf lady cult.
I mean, technically, yeah, Lori's doing a good service to this town. She just swooped in and killed one of their loose serial killers. But from what I took it is her first time, meaning her first transformation, which is like the tradition is when you do your first transformation, you wear the Red Riding Hood costume, I guess is like dramatic irony.
Because it's funny.
That's funny. The Little Red Riding Hood turns out to be a werewolf. That's just good stuff. So this lady werewolf cult, they got it going on. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do love for unknown reasons.
That poor guy was just making minimum wage at a party city and he got eaten. I feel bad for him.
I know. I feel bad for him. I relate.
The TV crew also.
Just doing their
job. That one guy who just thought he found some wonderful woman that was going to indulge his kink.
Yeah. All dead. Just because you got to, werewolves got to eat, I guess.
Werewolves got to wear.
Werewolves got to wear. I did want to mention too, as far as the rewatchability goes, hearkening back to that conversation in the changing room, everything they said in that scene now has a double meaning, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's so clever because they're like, oh, why are we coming to town? Fresh meat. She got sick last year. I ate some bad Mexican. Oh, she had a girl last time. Well, they all taste the same to me. Now it has just completely werewolf connotations to it. It's so good.
I love that. And Lori's sister calls her the runt of the litter at one point as well.
This segment, when you first watch it, is very like, it's mysterious, but it's incredibly cheeky upon a rewatch. You're like, I see you. You've been setting this up for the whole time. I see you, Mike Dougherty. And then we just see Sam sitting watching the werewolf murder, just like, this is fun. I like it.
He's like, I don't have to intervene here. I'm just going to hang out and see what's going on.
Having some spooky Halloween fun. I like it. They were wearing costumes. Mm-hmm. I do wonder how they go back to being human. Do they put all of their ripped off skin in a neat pile so they could bring it, so they put it back on later?
Back on. Or do they rip off the werewolf skin and then there's human skin underneath again?
Wherever they go, there's just piles of skin everywhere. Like every time they do this, they just leave like skin piles all around.
Werewolves are like Take Fives. They have layers.
Layers. They have layers. Can't wait till we get to the pretzel layer.
The fact that Sam is watching them there also is a callback to that dressing room scene too.
Yeah. Of
the little kid who is the actor who plays Sam watching them get changed into their slutty, legally distinct from Disney costumes.
Yep. Be like sleeping princess costume.
Glass slipper princess.
Oh my god, there was one. Oh my god, when I worked at Party City, there was a generic Wednesday Addams costume that was called like Midweek Meanie or something.
Midweek
Meanie? Something like that.
We were just at, like I said, Spirit. We were at Spirit Halloween, and I was taking pictures of all of the stupid ones. I don't know if it's from something, but they had all these weird, like, you know, they have like the inflatable suit costumes.
Yeah.
There was one that was just a green inflatable bodysuit, and it was just called Green. I was like, what is this?
I don't know.
I got a real kick out of your Instagram stories that day.
Yeah. It was good.
All right. So we're going to move on to the last segment, which is called Meet Sam. This is where Sam stops being, you know, lurking in the shadows, just watching, having a grand old time, where he takes center stage, and we end with yet another Halloween Scrooge, even a much more so Halloween Scrooge, because he didn't decorate his house out in Halloween stuff, just because, even though he hated it. I do want to point out, Brian Cox.
Krieg.
Mr. Krieg. Brian Cox, who plays Krieg, said he purposely made himself look like John Carpenter for this film.
Didn't even pick up on that at the time, but you're right.
It's so true. It's the frazzled. The frazzled white hair and the beard. It's so good.
I didn't even pick up on that at the time. That's great.
Oh my god. So he's a Halloween curmudgeon. He's a Scrooge. He uses his little dog to scare kids who try and trick-or-treat at his house and takes their candy. When he's flipping through channels too, he sees both House on Haunted Hill and Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island and switches away from them. Classic. Love Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
I love that channel surfing sequence because all of the channels that he's on correlates to one of the other stories in some way. So I thought that was a really nice touch.
It was good. And Sam begins to terrorize him by like throwing an egg at the window. And then we get the other half of interactions with the first story, which is where the cool layering of the story kicks in as well. Where when the principal was burying the dead kid, Krieg comes out and he's like, what are you doing out there, Wilkins? What are you doing out there? Hiding bodies? And he's like, Nah. We see the other half of that, which I think is cool, because he thinks his annoying kid is the one who's annoying Cree. Cree thinks Wilkins's annoying kid is the one bothering him, which I would put it past that kid. He was annoying.
It does not continuity track, because he would have been able to see the kid screaming out the window at the same time.
That is which true. I'm sure he's used to. That kid seems like the kind of kid who would be, just be screaming all the time for no reason.
God.
All the time.
And one of the other things Sam does to mess with Krieg is when he opens the door, he now has like 50 jack-o'-lanterns, which I don't know how Krieg looks at that and goes, those damn kids. This is an elaborate prank.
I would be terrified.
Like, this is a kind of a gang stalking thing.
I was going to say, it's now. Like some kind of gang initiation, like thing that like your aunt would share on Facebook. Like, don't flash your headlights if you walk out and there's a bunch of jack-o'-lanterns, call the police. It's a gang initiation.
That makes me wonder, too, if, because, like, Sam put all the pumpkins out at Krieg's house. Did he help Rhonda make all of her pumpkins, too? Because their setup was extremely similar. Mm.
Maybe he was just inspired by it.
Maybe.
He pinned it. Pinterest
board. Great. Later. Because Sam seems to just be like, I love Halloween. I love spooky shit. I want to be around spooky shit. And people who don't want to participate, I'm going to make them participate because that means more spooky shit for me.
Mm-hmm. Solid. He's like the ghost of Halloween past.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Like, yeah. It's very A Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. This particular segment is very much A Christmas Carol, but Halloween.
And it's literally making the spirit of Halloween a child trick-or-treating. It's just so cool.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's similar. Mike Dougherty, who made this movie, also made Krampus, which has a similar sort of thing. If you don't have the spirit of Christmas, bad stuff's happening.
Krampus is so good, too.
Yeah, it is.
I want Mike Dougherty to just make horror movies for every holiday. Nailed Halloween and Christmas. Give me Valentine's Day. Give me St. Patrick's Day. Give me Father's Day.
President's
Day. Just go down the list. President's Day. Give it to me.
I want Mecca George Washington, who doesn't think you're being patriotic enough. Just stomping down the streets of Washington, D.C.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to send him an email. See if I can get it made.
George, is this what you meant by, the right to bear arms? Absolutely.
He's just got two guns for arms.
So Sam has gotten inside Krieg's house and he lights up a jack-o'-lantern that shows he's been graffiti tagging his bedroom with like the words, trick or treat, give me something good to eat. And then he pulls a pet cemetery on Krieg by cutting his like Achilles with a razor blade.
That got me.
Always a wince moment whenever that happens.
Ugh. But in fairness, though, it only affects Krieg for about 5 seconds.
For about 5 seconds.
And then he forgets about it.
And what's important, as I said, this would connect earlier, the razor blade candy Sam is using is the candy bar he got from the principal in the opening segment.
Yeah.
So
candy.
So technically, this is the principal being a jackass again, too.
It also just occurred to me that in the werewolf lady segment, we've orphaned that little kid next door to Creed. And he's going to end up in the foster care system as a little homicidal maniac.
Yeah, he needs psychological help in that foster care because he's super. A psychopath.
He's not going to get it. I mean, at least when
the police come, they'll see that the copious amounts of evidence that his dad was a serial killer.
I just imagine the kids just like, oh yeah, my dad kills people. It's fine.
It's fine.
Don't all of your parents kill people?
Hey, mister, want to see my jack-o'-lantern?
Is that like not a normal dad thing to be a serial killer?
You know, you watch TV, you play catch together, and you murder people together. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And then Krieg tries to go down the stairs, but he trips on candy and glass, and having 18 locks on his door backfires because he can't bend his fingers to get all the locks off. It's just,
ow. Oh, that got me.
Ugh. Hand trauma is always a bad thing.
Hands and eyes,
yes,
for me, are what, like, well.
Eyes are the worst. And then we Sam crawls in the ceiling and gets, like, two sizes too big because he's now being played by a stunt performer and not a child. Like, he crawls on the ceiling and then jumps on him. And my first thought was, wow, that is a much differently sized actor than And Krieg shoots him with a shotgun, and we see his actual face, his like pumpkin head face, which is still kind of cute, honestly.
I like it. I think it's adorable.
I thought it looked like an alien.
Yeah. This is a weird sidetrack. My mom, who is the one who kind of got me into horror movies, she doesn't watch as many as I do, but she still loves them. She absolutely loves Sam. Like, she watches movies and she's like, he's so cute. I love him.
Plot twist. I did not know that about your mom.
Yep. She loves horror movies. My dad doesn't really watch horror movies, but my mom does.
I'm just looking at pictures of him without the mask on. He kind of looks like Yzma from The Emperor's New Groove.
Trick or treat, or I'll turn you into a llama.
He's so cute. I love it.
Oh my God. One of my notes is literally, man still has a rotary phone. Respect the drip. That's my note.
Respect the drip.
Because he calls the police before Sam's severed head cuts the phone line and cuts him again with the candy. But I was just like, he legit, like, imagine dialing a rotary phone with your fingers covered in glass shards. That would just make it that much more annoying. Like, get a new phone over the past 40 years, bro.
No one's calling him.
And another reference to John Carpenter is when the hand reattaches itself and crawls across the room, at the Brian Cox, who plays Creed, says the line, "You gotta be fucking kidding me," which is a reference to The Thing. As a side note, Brian Cox is also in the movie The Autopsy of Jane Doe. Check that movie out.
I like that movie.
So good.
That was a good movie. I was pleasantly surprised by that.
I haven't seen that. Does that have Donald Glover in it? Is that the one that I'm thinking of?
No, it's two main actors. Well, three main actors, technically. It's Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch.
Huh.
And that's like it.
Yeah. And there's a third actor named like Olwyn Kelly, but she plays a corpse.
Interesting.
Literally, like, she's literally on the table the whole movie.
She's Jane Doe for being autopsy, but they actually got an actor as opposed to a body, as opposed to like a fake body. And then Sam takes a bite out of this giant lollipop, which, holy crap, he makes like a murder weapon with a bite. That's terrifying. Cold
open. Like, some Rambo shit right there.
Like, at my work recently, they had dum-dums in like a thing, and I was like, when I was halfway done with it, I tried to bite it, and I was like, oh no, it's too big. I don't want to hurt my mouth doing that. And he just like shatters this lollipop with one bite. But then he is saved by candy because he stabs a candy bar and takes it as that trick-or-treat, passing it on. One of the rules, he always pass out candy. And Sam leaves without doing anything else because he learned his lesson to respect the spirit of Halloween, sort of.
Respect it, sort of.
By having
it was a
candy
hard lesson.
Fall on his lap at the exact right time.
But then, pan over, Krieg's been burning shit in the fire. And in his fireplace, we see a photo of all of the children from the school bus massacre, implying that Krieg has been the bus driver this whole time because they didn't know what happened to him. And I can't decide if that is a genius move or the dumbest move ever to fake your own death, change your identity, and still live in the same fucking town.
I didn't even think about him changing his identity. I just assumed the way this town works, he just went back to town and said, we had an accident at the rock quarry. And everyone was like, all right, whatever, man, go about your life.
I could have sworn there was a different name. Like, they refer to the bus driver by a different name, but I could be wrong. But like, that's a choice, man. That's, you stay choice in that fucking town.
And apparently they gave him enough money so that he could live in a, you know, respectable middle class home the rest of his life. So that's, you know,
as a bus driver in a town in Ohio.
Yeah, like, he's clearly not driving the bus anymore, so I imagine he's living off, you know, dead kid funds.
Dead kid funds. Yeah, his workers' comp claim from that bus accident.
Oh my God. And then we see that the spirit of Halloween did actually kind of get through, because then three little girls come to his front door and he passes out candy to them that he keeps in his arm sling, which is funny.
Yeah.
And the little girl is like, great mummy costume. It runs off.
He's just bleeding through his bandages, his wounds all over him, shuffling around.
Bandaged himself up pretty quick, though. Also, yeah, he did have a different name. It does say on the trick-or-treat Wikipedia page, nice, that he changed his name.
And lived in the same town.
Best and respect. Lived in the same town. So he could have collected a workers' comp claim, but instead...
he he lived off dead kid funds.
Decided to change his identity. Bold choice.
Bold choice, indeed. Oh my god. And then we have a full circle shot where the girl carrying the red wagon at the beginning of the movie is Rhonda, who crosses right in front of the car full of laughing girls who are the werewolf girls. And we also see the psychopath child wearing his dad's bloody shirt passing out candy, which is kind of horrifying if you think about
super
it.
Super horrifying.
Because like you said, now he's an orphan, but he's a psychopathic murderer orphan.
Murder orphan, yeah.
And then I've seen that movie. Yeah. They're making a prequel to that, and I don't know how. With the same actress, who is now like 17. They're going to try and de-age her for that movie. I don't know how that's going to work.
Interesting.
Probably going to be freaky.
Don't feel it. Not vibing.
Not vibe. doesn't pass the vibe check. And then we see our other Halloween Scrooge, the robot girl who we see die in the cold open. Sam's like, all right, I guess I'll go kill her instead. Because this guy learned his lesson. He's good. And then it ends with the fucking, oh, I love the ending.
Because that balances out.
That balances out. You know, the good
and evil. Yes.
Who cares? You know, he's just a mischief guy. He only commits the one murder, which is better than half the town, it seems. If we buy statistics.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Sam's body count is the lowest of everyone in the town. And so far for confirmed bodies, I have somewhere between 11 and 12.
Yep. That sounds about right.
Single night.
I mean, that's just an average Halloween.
Yeah. If you think about it, actually, now I'm thinking about it, the werewolves all killed more than one. The principal killed more than one. If you want to be technical, Rhonda killed three because...
So I'm like, my if is that I've got the two from the principal, the three from the school bus thing, those three kids. And then I've got at least four for the werewolf ladies. I know there's more in there, but I don't have...
We don't have the concrete proof. Yeah.
Yeah, concrete proof. And then we have Robot Lady from the beginning.
And I absolutely love the last shot of this movie where Cree is looking at it, all the Halloween stuff. He's like, all right, Halloween's kind of cool, I guess. Closes his door, knock on the door immediately. He turns around and opens it, and it's the eight kids from the school bus all holding trick-or-treat bags, and the vampire kid just says, trick-or-treat, and then boom, they get him. It's so good.
I love that. That was a good end.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me happy. Murder makes me happy. Chris Donovan, 2021.
Don't take that out of context.
Nope. I'll edit it out, maybe. And apparently, one thing I did not see until like the third or fourth time I rewatched it, you can actually see the school bus kids in the beginning of the movie. You can see them walking away from Krieg's house, or walking to Krieg's house in the cold open.
I didn't know that. I'm going to have to rewatch that now.
You can watch it on Halloween. It's tradition.
Yeah, that's tradition.
Tradition.
It's tradition. There's also, if you do want more Trick or Treat, we talked about this earlier in the show, but there is a graphic novel pseudo sequel called Trick or Treat Days of the Dead. There's also a few things you can watch on YouTube out there in YouTube land. On Michael Dougherty's official YouTube page, there's a bunch of ads for, I guess, FearNet a few years ago did a 24-hour Trick or Treat marathon, similar to how TBS does 24 hours of A Christmas Story.
Mm.
And so they shot ads for like, it's back to school, and here's Sam waiting at the school bus stop. It's Easter, and there's this horrifying Easter scene, and then you cut to Sam outside with Easter bunny ears on his head. And you'll see like, what's the other one? There's a Christmas one where Sam is helping a little girl bury her father in a snowman, and he has a little sock hat on. It's really cute. There's a lot of little side things you can see of Trick or Treat, because Sam has kind of become a little bit of a horror icon of himself since the release of the film. And rightfully so. He's really cool.
Yeah. Love it.
He's a mischievous little Halloween spirit, and we love him for it.
I was just looking at Mike Doherty's IMDb, and he's going to be the writer for the Hellraiser TV series that's coming out.
Ooh. Oh, I didn't know it was getting... I knew it was getting rebooted. I didn't know it was a TV series, though.
It's weird. They're making a TV series, and they're also making a new movie that's unrelated.
But isn't the movie, like, where Clive Barker approved again?
Yes.
Like, because for a while, the sequels were not Clive Barker approved.
Yes.
They were not. They got a little off the rails there for a little while. Yeah.
Also, no, I was going to say, has anyone here seen Event Horizon?
No.
Yeah.
Hellraiser, but in space.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mac made me watch it. It was very scary.
Yeah. I saw it for the first time this weekend, and I was like, what is this movie about?
Yeah.
And then at the end, when you see Sam Neill all fucked up, and you're like, no, it's Hellraiser, but in space. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
There was a big internet stink, because you know how the internet works. A few weeks ago, they announced the new Pinhead for the movie, and it was J.B. Clayton, who was a trans woman.
Yes.
And some people
Clive Barker approved.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where there was a lot of, you know, film bros who were like, cast a trans woman as Pinhead, so woke. Bleh. And it was like, do you not know Clive Barker, A, is very homosexual.
Yeah. B,
yeah. Hellraiser is a leather BDSM movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, in the book, Pinhead is described as agender, pretty much, with a soft feminine voice. Like, what are you guys mad about?
Yeah, like, what did you think this movie was originally? Because I can see now you were wrong.
You were wrong.
Yeah.
Because literally, Clive Barker said, I wrote it about the British leather BDSM scene and yeah. as a gay man.
It is, like, a very gay movie.
It is.
Oh, so gay. Nightbreed, too. Mm-hmm. Well, another Clive Barker classic there. Yeah.
Clive Barker's great. He can do anything.
Yeah.
Nightbreed was one of those movies where the first time I was watching it, I didn't know it was Clive Barker. And then, like, partway through, it was like, this is a Clive Barker movie. I was like, this makes sense now.
It's all coming together.
Same with, like, Midnight Meat Train. I did not know that was Clive Barker.
I didn't know that either.
And then the ending hit, and I was like, this is wacky. Who came up with this? Clive Barker came up with this.
I haven't seen that one.
It's good. But
put it on the list.
That ending throws you for a loop, is what I'll say. You're like, excuse me, the what now? Like, you'll watch it the first hour, 40 minutes, you'll be like, this doesn't seem like a Clive Barker movie. Then it ends and you're like, ah, here it is.
Also, I just saw an article where the headline is like, trans actor Jamie Clayton has been cast as Pinhead in an upcoming remake of very camp, very queer horror classic Hellraiser.
Yep. It always happens too, where it's like, there are people complaining about the new Candyman being woke, and it's like, did you not watch Candyman? Do you guys not understand what's going on here? I don't get it. People are weird.
I haven't seen Candyman in ages, though. I wanna marathon that with the new one. Same. At some point.
Actually, it was funny. Carrie just texted me on Sunday saying that she and her husband were watching Candyman. And I was like, because she was nerding out to me about the soundtrack. And I'm like, that music cue, the main theme of Candyman, is just such my jam.
Yeah, she texted me that too.
Yeah.
If we are shouting movie recommendations, I have already told you, Chris, but now I'm going to tell you on the air with this podcast, you got to watch Invisible Mother. It's available on iTunes right now. It is so good. It's your classic haunted house tale, but it's like, young lesbian comes home to her grandparents to aid her grandma, who now has Alzheimer's, and the house is haunted. It does a really good job of mixing, like, is this haunted or is it just grandma who has Alzheimer's?
Nice.
And it is terrifying. I loved it. So good. Watch it.
I will. I will add it to my list because I need to watch like 50 horror movies to make my top 10 horror movies of the year list that I do every year.
You gotta watch.
I'm far
watch
behind.
It. I will do another podcast episode about that movie. Let's with you it. If you watch.
I'm excited. That does transition me to my ending. We can end it off here. But you guys are invited back anytime. If you just want to see a movie, text me, email me. Hey, I want to talk about this movie. Done. We'll do it. As long as I haven't covered it before. That's the only rule.
I'll pick one of my stupid comedy horror movies.
Dude, I love it. One of my favorite movies of all time, like probably top five, is Tremors.
Oh, I love Tremors.
Oh my god, I love it.
I love Tremors.
And Tremors,
I love all of the Tremors. I like two. I like three. I like when it goes old west. I like all of those stupid movies.
They're so good. Like, I'll watch Tremors 1 and 2 especially. Like, those are the ones I watch the most any day. Like, just like, because there's some scary parts to it, but mostly it's just fun people being fun.
Yeah.
Love it.
I'll bring on the Vincent Price Haunting of Hill House.
It's super so classic. Good.
I love that movie. My dad got married a couple weekends ago, and in the hotel room at night, like the night before the wedding, my husband and I are in the hotel room, and like, that's what we put on in, like, our swanky ass hotel room at this fancy ass resort he's on. We, like, Chrome casted the Criterion app so we could watch a Vincent Price movie.
It's so classic. It's so good. That does remind me of a funny thing. Because, like I said, Elvira, the second and third movie she did for her 40th anniversary special were House on Haunted Hill and City of the Damned. What's funny about watching City of the Damned, the first time I ever saw it, it has young, hunky Christopher Lee in it. And I forgot that, like, when I first watched it, I thought he was just a side character. And then he turned out to be a major evil character. And I was like, I'm an idiot. You don't cast young Christopher Lee and don't make him a bad guy. What are you doing? That would be so foolish. All right, so that is going to do it for this Halloween episode of the Professional Horror Podcast. I hope it filled you with the spirit of Halloween, even if you're listening to this in, like, July or something. Keep that spooky feeling close to you and never let it go. Halloween is the best time of the year, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. I'd also like to thank my special guests for this episode, Nicole and Amanda. Be sure to check out the Kinky Ladies Book Club on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast. You guys want to run down your stuff?
Well, I know that I'm filled with the spirit of Halloween right now.
I'm stuffed with it.
Absolutely stuffed. And yeah, check out the Kinky Ladies Book Club. We are four women, one podcast, and a hard stack of romance novels. And I just want to thank you so much for having us, Chris. You are welcome on the Kinky Ladies Podcast at any time.
I would love to appear on the show. Quick side note, Nicole, the number one downside of listening to your podcast is it's weird because we're such close friends to hear your voice as much as I have to listen to it. It's like, this is weird. What's going on? That's my friend, Nicole.
My sister tried to listen to the podcast and she was like, I'm really sorry. I want to support you, but I just cannot listen to this.
That's the one thing. When I come on the show, I will introduce myself using the using my seductive voice. We'll even it out.
Yeah, you need to use your sexy voice, which now I just call my customer service voice. My husband's like, why don't you do that voice for me?
Oh my god. Oh my god, that's funny.
This is my work voice.
Speaking of being welcome back anytime, Nicole will actually be joining us in a few weeks for a special game episode of the Professional Horror Podcast. In 2 weeks, I'll be bringing you guys a bonus episode of some horror chats with Megan and Julia. And then 2 weeks from then, Nicole and I will go head-to-head in a game of Monster Mashup. As always, be sure to review the Professional Horror Podcast on wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Google, the works. And be sure to follow me at Professional Horror on Instagram and at @the_don_17 on Twitter. And if you have any comments, questions, recommendations for movies or guests, be sure to email me at professionalhorror@gmail.com. But until next time, stay scary, but keep it professional.